It's Monday, July 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, police and protesters seek common ground following a series of deadly shootings last week. South Sudan marked its Independence Day without much celebration.
The most important people to thank are the Australian people, because we have resolved this election.
Australians finally know the election outcome after more than a week. Also ahead, feathery photographs. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. The violent ambush that killed five Dallas police officers and wounded seven more could have been a lot worse. That according to the city's police chief. Dallas Chief of Police David Brown told CNN Sunday that the slain gunman told police negotiators he wanted to kill white people, especially white officers. Bomb-making materials and a journal were found at Johnson's home during a search on Friday. 25-year-old Micah Xavier Johnson was killed by police in the deadly attack late Thursday during a protest against police killings of African-American men. Since the shooting deaths of two black men by white police officers over 2 days last week, protests have been held across the country. Scores of demonstrators have been arrested, with one flashpoint being the southern city of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where DeRay McKesson, one of the most prominent activists linked to the police reform protest movement Black Lives Matter, live-streamed his own arrest. President Obama has weighed in during his trip to the NATO summit in Warsaw, Poland, where he urged people to be calm even amid sometimes heated emotions and inflammatory comments.
In a movement like Black Lives Matter, there's always going to be some folks who say things that are stupid or imprudent or overgeneralize or are harsh. And I don't think that you can hold well-meaning activists who are doing the right thing and peacefully protesting responsible for everything that is uttered at a protest.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins me in the studio with more on the continuing protests and marches throughout the weekend.
Jim, we've been looking for years at an issue when it comes to minority communities in this country, their relationship with the local law enforcement, when that breaks down, how people are treated. And there have been a number of, let's say, shootings, questionable deaths of minority individuals in our country over the years. The most recent incidents were in Minnesota and in Louisiana, two separate shootings, but happening one right after the other. And there was a great deal of anger about that. And there were vigils and protests held in many parts of the country. One of them was in Dallas, Texas, and there was a sizable police presence there, not to break it up because this was a peaceful protest, but you had people exercising their right to free speech, to free association, to demonstrate peacefully. And there was a sizable police presence there to protect them and to assure that everything was maintained in an orderly fashion, and shots rang out. This is sort of a new wrinkle in what is a truly depressing facet of modern American life, for lack of a better term.
The one in Minnesota, particularly a poignant incident, because it was captured not only on a cell phone, but streamed live as it happened on Facebook, and the entire country within a short period of time became a witness to this incident. The actual shooting was not captured, but the immediate aftermath was.
Jim, what this would seem to bring to light is the fact that what has been publicized to great effect in recent years is probably something that has been going on for a very long time, but now technology is such that the world can be made aware of it instantly. And there have indeed been instances of questionable police shootings being captured by someone's phone. We are in an era where technology has made this sort of thing possible. And you see police forces responding by putting cameras on the vests or on the lapels of all their officers. Dashboard cameras are now standard. They have been for quite some time. But clearly, there is a difference between what we used to hear, what we used to see years ago, which was we would read about it in the local newspaper, and there was a sense of separation from the event. But when you have things captured by people's cell phones and other devices and posted immediately, and you sense that immediacy, I think that the potential for frayed nerves to go awry and for people to run amok is definitely heightened.
President Obama, of course, in Europe for the NATO summit in Warsaw, Poland, on to Spain, and he is coming back to the United States and on his way to Dallas in the coming days.
Yes, he will be going there. And I mean, I think we sometimes forget that this is our nation's first African-American president. And I think that there was some hope, some expectation that merely the fact of elevating our first African-American person to the highest office in the land, that would provide some sort of magical healing potion across the country, that maybe things would improve, that race relations would get better. Clearly, that has not happened. And I suspect that as the president looks to his legacy and what he's leaving behind after 8 years in office, I suspect that one of his regrets will be that more progress was not made.
We always welcome Michael Bowman from the VOA Senate. He's our correspondent there, and we enjoy speaking with you each and every week.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, we turn to what's buzzing online. As you can imagine, it's a lot about the protests and the shootings. International Edition's social media reporter G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22 and with this weekend's social media roundup. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. All over America, the aftermath of the two police shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota, and of course, what happened in Dallas, is still trending. Hashtag Black Lives Matter is still trending, and like Michael mentioned, hundreds of protesters have been arrested in several states.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a big hashtag.
Mm-hmm, that is. And I saw some reports that a prominent Black Lives Matter activist has been arrested and released. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his name is DeRay McKisson, like you mentioned, and he was arrested in Louisiana. I also want to note that he wore a T-shirt that has hashtag Stay Woke written on it. And can you guess what that means?
What?
Stay Woke. That means, it's a millennial jargon, that means stay enlightened or interested in current affairs.
All right.
The Wall Street Journal posted a report on the developing story on Facebook, and it seems like many of its readers are not supporting the movement. One of the most liked comments asked, if Black Lives Matter so much to this group, why are they not in Detroit helping those that need them? And argued that Black people are murdering other Black people every day, and there's no protest about it, which is a really big assumption. And responding to that comment, many people pointed out that just because these crimes exist, that doesn't mean there's no problem with the interaction between the police force and the African-American community.
Well, let's for a minute delve a little bit deeper into the social media mm-hmm. element to the Minnesota incident. What's the reaction like from Facebook executives?
Both its founder, Mark Zuckerberg, and COO, Sheryl Sandberg, posted about the death of Philando Castile, and Zuckerberg wrote this. Here's a snippet. While I hope we never have to see another video like Diamonds, who is the girlfriend of Castile, mm-hmm. it reminds us why coming together to build a more open and connected world is so important and how far we still have to go. That's all for me today. Jim?
Well, thank you so much for that wrap-up, G. And you may tweet your comments and questions to our Twitter stream. It's at VOA_IE. And there you will also find myself and G on Twitter. I'm at VOA Stevenson, and she's at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour, Cambodian activists gunned down in Phnom Penh. 15 die as protests roil Indian Kashmir after rebels' death. Australia's opposition Labour Party concedes defeat in national elections. Polls say Japan's ruling coalition expands majority in upper house. Pakistan rejects Afghan claims on terrorism. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. South Sudan marked its fifth birthday Saturday as more than 100 new deaths were recorded amid a protracted civil war and a deep economic crisis. Jason Patinkin spoke to South Sudanese citizens who are living in Nairobi about the dashed hopes of independence.
South Sudan turned 5 years old Saturday, but instead of music, whistles, and vuvuzelas as in past years, citizens are hearing gunshots. Late Friday, shooting erupted outside the presidential palace, soon engulfing the whole city. More than 100 people died. It was the latest clash in a brutal civil war which broke out in 2013. Tens of thousands have been killed as forces of the president, Salva Kiir, fight those of his rival, the current vice president, Riek Machar. The two men are accused of leading troops who murdered and raped civilians. Elizabeth Dang, a South Sudanese citizen working for rights group Amnesty International, recalls the hopes of 5 years ago, before the civil war.
I remember in Salva Kiir's speech in 2011 on Independence Day, he promised ratification of human rights treaties and their implementation. Unfortunately, the government has committed human rights violations without holding its own forces accountable for these. So it seems like those promises have unfortunately not been implemented.
Kiir and Machar signed a peace deal last August and formed a government together in April, but they have been unable to stop violence across the nation.
Unfortunately, the signing of the peace agreement last August 2015 hasn't really resulted in an end to the conflict. There were recently clashes in Wau that led to significant displacement and estimates of hundreds of civilian deaths. And in Juba over the past few days, people have been hearing gunshots.
Corruption has ruined South Sudan's economy. The World Food Program says 4.8 million South Sudanese will face severe food shortages this year, with parts of the country on the edge of famine. The fighting has forced 2.4 million people from their homes. Hundreds of thousands have left the country as refugees. UNHCR predicts 1 million South Sudanese will leave by the end of this year. South Sudanese lawyer Dong Luwak says the exodus is a vote of no confidence.
I don't think that if there is anyone who have feeling towards South Sudan now as a country, that's why everybody is leaving the country.
The peace deal, backed by the West, was designed to keep Kiir and Machar, two old adversaries, in power. Dong says that was a mistake.
I think the best thing is that they are held account to their the atrocities they have committed, and they should beware those who committed crime against humanity and war crimes should be in prison, not in the palaces.
Kiir and Machar are members of the same political party, the SPLM. It was once hailed as liberators for its role in fighting the repressive government of the north in Khartoum. But Peter Adwak Nyaba, South Sudan's Minister of Higher Education, says the SPLM's legacy is now one of violence and corruption.
The SPLM as a party does not exist. The leadership has failed to transform it from what it is as a liberation movement into a political party. So after 2 years, it's just a place for looting, only nothing more, I would say.
With war, poverty, and hunger across the land, there was little to celebrate this Independence Day. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Nairobi.
Australia's opposition Labour Party conceded defeat Sunday in national elections 8 days after voting concluded. Labour Party leader Bill Shorten said he was certain Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and his coalition government would secure enough seats to retain power. Turnbull said later that his Conservative coalition will remain in power for a second 3-year term.
This is a day of thanks. There are many people to thank. But the most important people to thank are the Australian people. Because we have resolved this election, we've gone through this election with fiercely fought arguments, issues of policy, issues of principle. And we've done so peacefully and constructively.
Vote counting is not over yet, and it's still not clear whether the coalition will win enough seats to form a majority government or be forced to ally with independent and minority party lawmakers to form a minority government. Parties need to hold at least 76 seats in the 150-seat House of Representatives in order to form a majority government. While climate change, immigration, and education were key issues of the election campaign, the economy has been the determining factor of the outcome. You can read more about this and many other stories at voanews.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE, and you can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Feathers are one of the most distinctive features of birds, and they can vary in shape, size, and structure. They have different functions as well, and also from protection to insulation, camouflage, even sexual attraction and flight. Because of all of that, feathers are rich in color and beauty. And that's what National Geographic photographer Robert Clark has captured in his new book. VOA's Faiza El-Masri has more as Faith Lapidus narrates.
Taking pictures of feathers was a dream assignment for photographer Robert Clark, who loves nature and finds beauty in birds.
I got the assignment from the National Geographic, so it started out as a magazine article. And we were lucky. We were working with some scientists, and we went to China and shot a lot of the fossil evidence of feathers, which takes the origin of feathers way back in time, to, you know, 160 million years old or so. And we went to feather collections around the world. I also made some visits to different zoos around the United States. We spent a lot of time in taxidermy shops, so I was able to shoot some of the things that were extinct, like passenger pigeons and Carolina parakeets.
These photographic journeys took around a year and resulted in a new book, Feathers, Displays of Brilliant Plumage. Along with dozens of bold, eye-popping images, Clark includes information that many people may not know about feathers.
One thing people don't understand and realize, and I was a little bit aware of this, but I learned it in much greater detail, is something called structural color. When you look at a feather from different angles, it has an iridescence to it, and, you know, peacock feathers is a great example to where it'll go blue to green to kind of a purple color. The color is built to the design and to the shape of the feather, and the reason it looks different is that the light goes through it, and then the light is bent. It's not just reflected, so the light is bent and comes out a little bit different direction. So it creates this iridescence, and there's a lot of reasons for it, sexual attraction and camouflage and different things like that.
Portraits in the book, and they are portraits, illustrate the diversity in feathers' shape and function. The southern cassowary, for example, can't fly, so its coarse, hair-like feathers serve mostly as insulation and protection. That's not the case for the lesser snow goose.
I think my favorite is the lesser snow goose, which is a pretty large wing. It's a migratory bird, and it's a high flyer. So it has these very aerodynamic wings, and it has a uvula coming off of it. It's kind of like a thumb on the top part of it, and I think it's just compositionally, I think it's a beautiful, beautiful wing. Not very colorful, but it certainly is a nicely composed wing.
Other birds' feathers are designed to attract mates.
The great Argus is a bird that's kind of drab in color, but then it lifts its wing up, and it's got this multicolored pattern blue and yellow and little speckles all over it. And some of the biologists I've spoken with believe that the pattern replicates some of the seeds that the birds eat. So when you show a female, you know, hey, I have all these seeds here, they're attracted to a bird that has more food. So there's little things like that that you learn that make feathers even more interesting.
As a photographer, Clark says he followed a very direct approach in aiming his lens at the feathers.
I photographed them in a very similar fashion because I wanted the difference to be the feather, not the lighting or the composition or the background. I wanted it to be a comparison from feather to feather. So I wanted it to be a photographic study where everything is the same. So when you look at them, what you saw was the difference.
Clark hopes people will look at his photographs and discover what he realized while working on this project.
I found something that you see all the time in nature, and it wasn't until I really stopped and looked at it that I totally appreciated it. And I just think people need to slow down and look at things.
For a slow look at some of the feathers Robert Clark photographed, visit his website, robertclark.com. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, that's voanews.com. We're also on Facebook at VOA Now and on Twitter. Follow us at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us today. Come back when you can and have a wonderful day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly supports entrepreneurship at home and abroad as a means to create not only prosperity, but peace and stability. Speaking at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said, "Economic policy is foreign policy, and foreign policy is economic policy, particularly in the globalized world we're living in today." Secretary Kerry encouraged young people in particular to create new businesses, even if they started small. He urged young business owners to not only create new products and turn a profit, but as innovators and entrepreneurs with a stake in society, to also take on some of the societal challenges facing many countries. One of those challenges is violent extremism and the emergence of radical non-state actors who are out to exploit frustrations faced by many young people around the world. Indeed, in the Middle East, Africa, South Central, and East Asia, 60 to 65% of the populations are under the age of 30. These young people, said Secretary Kerry, need education and opportunity as soon as possible to keep them from being lured away by extremist ideologies. Successful new businesses provide inspiration to those who see no potential for improving their own circumstances. Speaking to young entrepreneurs, Secretary Kerry said, "You also provide a highly visible and very effective rebuttal to the propaganda of violent extremist groups, because your optimism provides an alternative to their nihilism, because you're trying to build the brighter future that, in fact, these folks are determined to prevent. Because you are living a narrative of modern civilization and progress that is diametrically opposed to the dark worldview of Daesh." Another challenge for young entrepreneurs to take on is corruption. Anyone in local or international business confronts this issue every day in a variety of ways. For entrepreneurs, poor governance can mean the difference between being able to start up or survive or never getting started at all. And there are countless ways that new entrepreneurs can help hold governments accountable. As Secretary Kerry emphasized, you want to be able to open your enterprises without having to pay a bribe or be dependent on making friends in high places. Being a global entrepreneur is about understanding and then using one's power to change the world. It's about leading the world toward a future of prosperity, peace, and progress.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.